This broadcast contains the current opinions of the host. The opinions are subject to change. The broadcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice or recommendations. Investors should obtain professional advice before making investment decisions. This is not a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any company, industry, or security. The information has been obtained from sources we consider to be reliable but cannot guarantee their accuracy. For more information about any companies discussed, please contact Baird. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and diversification does not ensure a profit or protect against loss. All investments carry some level of risk, including loss of principal. An investment cannot be made directly in an index. While Baird does not offer tax or legal advice, our financial advisors regularly work with clients' attorneys and tax professionals to help ensure that all phases of wealth management are addressed. Please consult your legal or tax professional for specific information. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of each fund carefully before investing. This and other information is found in the prospectus and summary prospectus. For a prospectus or summary prospectus, contact Baird directly at 866-442-2473. Please read the prospectus or summary prospectus carefully before investing. Brokered CDs differ from CDs issued by banks directly to a customer. Those differences should be studied carefully before investing. This broadcast may not be reproduced without expressed permission of Baird. Copyright 2023 Robert W. Baird & Company, Incorporated. Member SIPC. All right reserved.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Your Money and You, sponsored by Baird. My name is Kirk Carlson, and I'm your host for today. With me, as usual, is Brian Coble, a member of the Carlson Group. As mentioned, the purpose of the show is to keep you up to date on situations and events that affect your savings, investments, taxes, real estate, or anything else relating to your money. If you have any questions for us, you can call into the studio at 866-391-1020. Or you can send us an email at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. That's yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. Today, Brian will provide a recap of this past week and what the stock and bond markets were focusing on in preparation for the monthly release of the always anticipated jobs number that came out on Friday. Just as a reminder, for additional interesting and timely commentary from Brian, you can always go to our website, where you can find the replay of our recent webinar, What to Know and What to Do, from this past Thursday, as well as Top of Mind and Frequently Asked Questions and Rarely Asked Questions. You can do that at thecarlsongroup.bairdwealth.com. And we'll mention the websites and the phone numbers again throughout the show in case you didn't get to jot those down. But for right now, why don't we turn it over to Brian to get us started. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Kurt, and good morning to all the listeners out there. Well, it's been a difficult several weeks for the market. Stocks, as measured by the S&P 500, are down about 8% from their highs back in early August. And Baird's research arm, Strategus Research, says this is due to three reasons. Number one, rising interest rates. Number two, higher oil prices. And number three, a stronger dollar. Let's talk about each of those. First, rising interest rates. The 10-year Treasury yield has risen nearly 1% just over the last several weeks. And that may not sound like a lot, but that's a big move in the usually sedate bond market. And of course, investors are worried that higher rates could slow the economy. Why are rates higher? Well, I think by now you know the answer. The Federal Reserve has pledged to keep interest rates high to battle inflation. Of course, the Fed's tune could change in a hurry if the economic data starts to weaken or they become more comfortable with inflation. But for now, the Fed has pledged higher rates for longer. Secondly, higher oil prices up to nearly $90 a barrel. That's translated to nearly $4 a gallon on gas, and also a big spike in diesel prices, which of course matters for the trucking industry. Folks looking to fill up their heating oil tank ahead of the winter may be looking at a bill of $3,000 to $4,000. And lastly, the stronger dollar. Now, what's wrong with a stronger dollar, you ask? Well, nothing really, but Wall Street does worry that at least over the short term, a stronger dollar could eat into profits for U.S. companies that do business overseas. What happens next? Well, so much comes back to, what else? The Federal Reserve. And this has really been the story of the last 18 months. If the Fed remains worried about inflation and continues to turn the screws on the economy to tame inflation, well, certainly we can see more volatility ahead. On the other hand, if the Fed were to become satisfied that its mission is accomplished and inflation is decisively heading back to where they want it, then stocks could post a nice rebound. As things stand today, the S&P 500 is still up about 12% for the year. Notably, though, almost all of that gain is due to the influence of large technology companies, or what some people have called the Magnificent Seven stocks. And you know them by now: Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and so on. These stocks make up nearly 30% of the index and are doing well in large part because of enthusiasm toward breakthroughs in artificial intelligence technology. Now, strip out the effect of those stocks and just look at the average stock in the S&P 500, or what's called the S&P 500 Equal Weight Index, and the market is actually flat for the year. There's two ways to look at this. We can either look at it glass half empty or glass half full. The glass half empty view is that diversification beyond those top handful of stocks has not helped this year. On the other hand, the glass half full view is that although markets continue to wrestle with inflation and the Federal Reserve, those large technology companies are beginning to sniff out a future economy that's reshaped by technology and in part by artificial intelligence. And so, thank goodness, in some sense, for the large technology companies as part of a diversified portfolio in what is otherwise a very uncertain environment for the economy and markets. Likewise, if we look at the bond market and the rise in interest rates, we can view it either through a glass half empty or a glass half full lens. Glass half empty, bonds are down again this year, even after big losses last year. This is by far the longest lasting bond bear market in history. Glass half full, well, with interest rates up, the forward-looking returns of bonds should be better. So the following is the yield to maturity for different areas of the bond market. I'm using indices put out by Standard & Poor's. Pennsylvania municipal bonds, 4.7% yield to maturity. And of course, the interest on muni bonds is tax-free. So it's even higher on a taxable equivalent basis. 3-month T-bills, 5.5%. The overall bond market, as measured by the aggregate bond index, also 5.5%. High-yield municipal bonds, over 6.3%. And again, that's federally tax-free. And so the taxable equivalent yield is even higher. And then high-yield corporate bonds, as of last check, 9.5% yield to maturity. And again, that's just a starting point for thinking about the future return potential for bonds. But if that's a reasonable estimate, and again, there's no guarantees, but if it is a reasonable estimate, then that's a solid building block for portfolio returns. And stocks wouldn't need to knock it out of the park for a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds to deliver solid results. And with that, Kurt, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Brian. And I know we'll be doing some follow-ups on each of those points throughout the show, and we'll have some more information when we come back from break. But before we take our first break, just a reminder that if you have a question for us, you can call in at 866-391-1020, 866-391-1020. Or if that's a little uncomfortable for you, you can always just send us an email at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. With that, we're going to take our first break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back. You're listening to Your Money and You on KDKA, sponsored by Baird. And again, real quick, the phone numbers here in the studio, 866-391-1020, or an email at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. Now, before we get to any of those, did want to follow up, and Brian and I were on a webinar this past week and had some interesting tips for individuals at different parts of their life cycle. So how to deal with some of the effects of inflation, which seems to be the buzzword nowadays. You know, some ideas for retirees, those maybe in their mid-career, and then also for young adults. And I thought that we would maybe highlight a few of those that could be helpful. So for retirees, and this could actually apply to anybody, but especially for retirees who are thinking about that cash bucket that Jim always talks about on the show, keep in mind and pay attention to the interest rate you're getting on bank deposits. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this past week that highlighted one of the nation's largest bank where the savings rate for savings accounts was still at 0.01%. So again, don't just presume that because rates are going up that those rates are being passed on to you. And as Brian mentioned, you know, short-term treasuries, even money markets, you can find these in the close to the 5% range, which is significant. Also, if you have a leased car, and normally in the past you would just go and hand your keys in and look at a new one, this time around, especially if you ended up with a pre-pandemic purchase, some of those buyouts on those leases could be very competitive at the previous low interest rates, because that's roughly how they figure out the value of the buyout. It might be better, especially if you like the car, to buy the car out of the lease rather than to re-lease. Other kind of things to take a look at, if you haven't started your Social Security benefits, maybe reconsider, depending upon whether you need those that cash flow right away, whether you want to leave those on deposit, so to speak, and get a higher monthly payment. And again, any of the advisors at Baird can help you navigate through what might be the best choice on Social Security. Also, if you're over 70 and a half, don't forget to consider the qualified charitable distribution strategy, something that will allow you to continue to benefit charities and do your donations, but not affecting your checking account, which again is probably being squeezed by the effects of inflation. So it's a little bit of a win-win. If you're in your mid-career, don't get mad, get even, and that can often be done through stock ownership. You know, as inflation continues to go higher, that means prices are higher, and prices are higher oftentimes means that companies still want to maintain their same level of, or even higher profits. So over time, you can benefit by this by, again, instead of fighting, it's joining and continue to be a owner of good diversified stocks. Also, don't forget variable rate debt. If you had maybe a home equity line of credit a couple years ago and the rate was maybe in the 2-3% range, it's probably now in the 8% range. So again, if there's, and we see this fairly often, there'll be situations where people will have excess cash reserves in the bank paying under 1%, but at the same time, they're paying sometimes the very same bank 8% in interest, essentially losing 7% guaranteed just at the same institution. Of course, they're never going to tell you to move money from one account to the other and pay it off, but you may want to revisit variable rate debt. If you're a young parent, maybe take advantage of the current volatility, start putting some money into the 529 savings plan. If you're a Pennsylvania resident, you know that you get a Pennsylvania tax deduction. Other listeners to the show, you may have different benefits in your state, but it's well worth looking into those as well. So again, funding your 529 can make a lot of sense. And don't forget your 401k plan to make sure you're at least putting in for the match. But ideally, this would be a great time if you're 50 and older to consider the catch-up contributions. And for those of you listening who are 50 and older, your limit this year is up to $30,000 without any phase-outs or reductions due to adjusted gross income. So again, take advantage of being a buyer when oftentimes the market is in disruption and people are selling. So again, buying at a discount has always been a good thing. And lastly, don't forget to look at any HSA accounts. These are great ways to put money away tax deductible, let grow tax deferred, and come out tax free for anything that may be healthcare related that are not reimbursed by insurance. And then for young adults, you know, that's still a strong jobs market. You know, we saw that on Friday, and, you know, it seems to be confounding some of the economists, and, you know, Brian and I can weigh in a little bit on that during the course of the show. But as a result of that, you know, don't forget to negotiate your salary. Again, you may be currently more in the driver's seat than you think. Don't forget credit card travel awards. If you're going to use your credit card, make sure you pay them off. But again, you could take advantage, whether it's flights, hotels, et cetera. Another thing that tends to happen a lot, especially with most of us, but also the younger adults, a lot of eating out versus eating in. And of course, that's expensive. One way to handle some of the inflation is maybe dine in instead. Also, don't forget your 401k match. Absolutely do that. Again, there was a good article in the Wall Street Journal that we can follow up regarding a survey on 401ks and where millennials seem to be standing today versus their parents. And lastly, again, take a look at your streaming and your applications. You may have downloaded a whole bunch of things and signed up for a whole bunch of things, and maybe you're paying $3 here a month, $10 here, $20 here. All of those things add up. So revisit your apps. With that, Brian, I know that there were some surprises that we had highlighted on our webinar this past week, and I thought maybe you might want to highlight a few of those surprises.
Sure, absolutely, Kurt. And so we highlighted five surprises that investors have faced in 2023. And I think everybody would agree it's been a year of surprises, and I think maybe a good 3 or 4 years of surprises ever since the pandemic hit. But we highlighted five, and most of them are positive surprises for the simple reason that there was so much pessimism last year. And in fact, coming into the year, economists had never been so certain that there would be a recession as they were last December. And so that is our first surprise that we highlighted, just the fact that there has not been a recession this year, and the economy has been more resilient than most economists expected, and including yesterday's jobs number, where we saw about 300 plus thousand jobs added, which was 2 times what economists predicted. And we can chalk this up to what I'll call painless disinflation. Now, what does that mean? Well, the basic idea is that, and this is the surprise, inflation has fallen without the jobs market weakening. Okay, inflation has fallen without the jobs market weakening. So inflation has gone from over 9% a year ago back down to somewhere around 3%, but the unemployment rate is basically unchanged. It's still in the mid 3 percentage point range. And economists are very surprised by this. The assumption on Wall Street has always been that for inflation to come down, the jobs market has to weaken. In other words, people need to lose their jobs and the economy needs to weaken. And that's exactly what the Fed said back in the summer of 2022 that really spooked the markets and led to the big sell-off last year. The Fed said for to have lower inflation, it would require, quote, some pain. But thus far, inflation has fallen without there being much pain in the jobs market. Big reason for that, I think, in my opinion, is there were kind of 2 reasons for inflation. One had to do with all of the stimulus and the economy overheating from the demand side. The other had to do with the supply side and all of the supply constraints brought on by COVID, whether that was worker shortages or breakdown in supply chains coming out of overseas. And a lot of those supply concerns have now been alleviated. So the supply chain issue relating to overseas economies, that's gotten much better. And then I think actually the big surprise has been the fact that workers have come back. So if you look at the labor force participation rate for what the government calls prime age workers, those are folks mostly in their 30s and 40s. It has spiked higher. It's almost to its highest level in a quarter century. And so if you went back a year ago, people were very concerned about worker shortages. And, you know, there's still not an abundance of workers out there, but a lot more people have reentered the labor force than folks expected. And so a few more surprises we can talk about as the show goes on. Kurt, one other point I wanted to make, just to piggyback on your comments about inflation, is this distinction between inflation and the cost of living. So a lot of times we say inflation has come down and people say, well, I'm not seeing it. I go to the grocery store or the gas pump and it's extremely expensive. Well, we have to make a distinction. Inflation is the rate of change in prices. The cost of living refers to the level of prices. So prices are no longer rising as quickly as they were. So inflation has come down, but prices remain high, and the cost of living, the high cost of living, is going nowhere. And of course, inflation compounds. So even if we have a 2 or 3% rate of inflation, it's compounding on that higher level from before. So we can hold these two things at the same time: inflation coming down, but the cost of living staying high.
Thanks for that insight, Brian. And again, we're getting close to the news. We do have a number of people holding online, calling in. We'll get to them after the news, but did want to reiterate the phone number, 866-391-1020, or yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. And again, once we get those in, but for right now, we're just going to take a quick break, and when we come back after the news again, like I said, we'll get to Bob and Debbie as soon as we're done with the news. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Thanks for holding on for our callers. We're going to get to in just a minute. I did want to remind our listeners that you can give us a call, 866-391-1020, into the studio, or send us an email at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. And again, if you want a summary of the inflation tips as well as the surprises that we referenced in the first part of the hour, you can go to our website at carlsongroups.bairdwealth.com, and it would be under our webinar for this past week, as well as our top of mind where we talk about inflation tips. All right, let's go to our first caller from Bob in Monroeville. Good morning, Bob. You're on KDKA.
Good morning, Falls. I have it sort of a two-part question. What it is you can give anybody, like, say, one of my adult children, $1,700 this year tax-free. Is that correct?
So the gifting is $17,000. And so,
$17,000. That was my error. But my question is, could you instead give them $17,000 worth of stock that you own?
Yes, you can. Well, so the $17,000 is not limited just to cash. It can be the value of something. It could be the value of a car. It could be the value of stock. It could be a combination of used car, stock, and cash, and it's $17,000 per person per year. So if somebody is married and they want to give their son or daughter a gift, it could be double, so it could be $34,000. And if that son or daughter is married, and you should you choose to give to the couple, it could go as high as now $68,000. So all of that is tax-free. Now, Bob, just a quick comment. There is never a tax on the recipient, and theoretically, there's no current tax if you go over the $17,000. What the rules suggest and require is that if you give more than $17,000 to a person in one calendar year, you're supposed to file a form. It's called the form 709, and basically and then that comes off of your credit. So this year the credit is $12,920,000. So, for example, if you were to give them $117,000, your credit then, instead of being $12,920,000, is $12,820,000. So for the majority of people who are not going to go over the $12 million limit, giving extra gifting is more of a filing issue. It's not necessarily a tax issue today. Okay?
Okay, but the second part of this question is, what is the value of the stock? Is it what it is currently now, or is it what I originally paid for it?
Good question. So you need to know both. So the value of the gift will be the value of the stock on the day that you transfer it from your account to your child's account. Now,
okay, so it's the current value is what you're saying, not what I paid for it.
That is correct. Now, but what you paid for it follows the gift. So if you bought a stock for $10 and now it's $20, the gift will be based on the $20. But your son or daughter will still need to know the basis of 10. They don't get a stepped up basis. So if they sell it down the road, they don't get to claim it at 20. They have to still use what you paid for it. So the tax consequence follows the gift to them. So you would need to let them know what you paid for it and when you bought it. So should they choose to sell it in the future, they're going to base it on what you paid for it, not the value of the gift. So the gift is on the current value. The consequences of a future sale is based upon what you paid for it.
What's the advantage of that over just leaving it to them in your will eventually?
Yeah. Well, another good question. So if you hold on to it and you leave it to them in your will, then that gain, that $10 to $20, is wiped clean, and now they inherit the value of the stock at $20. And if they decide to sell it right after inheriting it, they would pay no income tax at all, versus if you give it to them now when they sell it at $20, they're going to have to pay tax on that $10. So there can be an advantageous situation as you're analyzing what to give, when to give, how to give. Oftentimes, accountants and lawyers and advisors might suggest that very highly appreciated stock that you own, maybe don't gift that away. Maybe that is best held in your estate so that when that goes to the children, they pay no income tax whatsoever. Now, they will have to pay some inheritance tax, but 4.5% inheritance tax may be a lot less than up to 24%.
Well, the item is that I had bought a stock at $20 a share, and it's now worth $330 a share.
Well, so here's what you could either do a couple things. One, you would hold on to that, and then when they inherit it, as long as it doesn't go back to $30. They would have all of their gain wiped clean. Another thing is, if you are doing any charitable donations
I do not do any charitable donations. I got drafted in the Army twice, and that's my only donation to charity was serving twice in the United States Army.
Well, that's hugely significant, and we thank you so much for your service. And that's a bigger donation than the most of us probably will ever do in our lifetime. So we appreciate that.
I follow Jim's rule, by the way, too, also, that no debt is the best debt.
Yep. So it sounds like you're in a good situation with some choices. It could be a combination of a couple things. The other thing is to take a look at where you are tax-wise and where your kids are tax-wise. If your tax bracket is lower than their tax bracket, then maybe you sell some of it and give cash. If they're in a lower bracket, then that's one advantage of donating the stock to them or gifting it to them. Then they sell it, and maybe they would pay a lower tax, on that capital gain. So there are a number of things to think about. You brought up three very key, important ideas that are both individually important, but then collectively are also related. And so I would say before you do anything, it makes sense to sit down with your advisor and probably the accountant and get some ideas and then come up with a strategy first. But you're definitely on the right track to ask these questions first before doing anything.
I really appreciate all your help on this item because I was really a little bit confused on it as far as whether you could give them stock in lieu of cash. That was the main thing.
Well, you can do a lot of different things.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for listening to the show. And if you need anything, call our offices throughout the week. All right. Let's go to our next caller, Debbie in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Debbie.
Hi. I have a question about using a broker. What's the pros and cons of using a broker to buy CDs?
Brian, you want to jump in on this one? Because I know that we've talked about this before in previous calls.
Sure. I'm happy to answer that. So there's basically two ways to buy a CD. One is to go to the bank. And the second is to buy a CD through a broker. Now, both of them can be good options. It just depends on what you're looking for. If you buy a CD at the bank, there's an upside and a downside. The downside is typically the CD term is fixed, and you're unable to, if you need the money, to pull it out without paying a penalty. The potential upside of a bank CD is that you're able typically to get compound interest. So the interest basically reinvests into the CD. Now, if you buy a CD through a financial advisor, it's FDIC insured and safe, just like a bank CD would be. The upside is you're able to you're not tied in or you're not locked into that CD. You're actually able to buy and sell it just like you would an individual bond. So if you might need the money back, that might be a better option. The potential downside is its price will fluctuate just like a bond's price will fluctuate throughout the day and throughout the year. So both can make total sense. A lot of times the tiebreaker can be the fees involved with buying and selling. What are the fees attached to the bank CD? And then also what would be the commissions attached to the financial advisor or broker CD? So I think you have two good options, and either one can work depending on your circumstances.
Okay, I have one other question. Why when you use a broker, it doesn't compound interest that you have to use a, you know, your interest goes into a separate account.
Yeah, because it's a securitized CD, so it's a CD that pays the interest to you, and there's really no mechanism, like if it were a bank and it's their own product captive to them, and it's not trading as a security. There's no mechanism in a brokered CD for that money to get reinvested, so it just comes straight back to you.
What else did I want to ask you? I guess that's it. That's pretty much, you know, do they get a better rate? Does the broker get a better rate on a CD than you would it going out on your own?
You're going to need to just check CD by CD. I don't think there's a across-the-board answer to that. You're just going to have to see, okay, what's the bank offering? What is the brokered CD offering, and just case-by-case basis.
Yeah, analyze it yourself. A long time ago, there used to be some banks that did something called CDOR. Are you familiar with that?
Is that...
It was CDs, yeah. And they... I can't remember what exactly it was.
Yeah, Debbie, I was going to say, there are times where banks will utilize their CDs also as a form of marketing. If you think of the CDs that Brian mentioned that are available in a brokerage account, those, of course, are CDs that are competing with all other banks, and they tend to then fall within a certain competitive range. But banks that are offering their CDs, branch by branch, oftentimes, they can do teaser rates, and they can do a variety of different things, whether they're called step rates. They can adjust them. They have more flexibility if they keep that internally within the bank. And again, there are times where either you could get a higher teaser rate. And again, we're seeing that happen a little bit more nowadays, because the bank does not want to really give you much interest on your checking and savings. So if they can give you a pretty good rate on your CD, you might forget that you're getting 1% on your savings account because you're getting 5.5% on a CD. But at the end of the day, if it's equal amount of money, you're probably averaging around 3%. So you just right now, it's caveat emptor. You just have to, as Brian mentioned, you're just going to have to do your homework. You're going to have to figure out where best to go. And sometimes you go one place better for a money market, another place better for a CD, and another place better for your bank account. So at least you're getting paid good money today to do your homework. So, all right. Well, thanks.
I have one other question. Good to lock in like a CD maybe for a longer term now? Do you think the rates will go down? So if you can get a good rate now, lock it in maybe for 3 years?
So, the expectation has been that rates are getting close to the end, and then at some point, because in the past, typically the Federal Reserve has raised rates too much, and then they've had to pull back because of a recession. That may or may not happen. But one thing that you can do, and that I know that Brian and I have done, in many cases for clients, is let's say rather than, locking in completely for 3 years, maybe have a fourth of your money liquid in a money market, and maybe one fourth in a 1 year CD, one fourth in a 2 year CD, and one fourth in a 3 year CD. And you can ladder it out so that you're not making a commitment to one particular thing, but you do have things spread out. So you might want to think of that as well. Now, if you have a specific purchase in mind where you're going to need the money exactly in 3 years, then locking in a 3 year CD is not a bad idea. But unfortunately, we have to go to break, but you're thinking along the right lines, and feel free to give us a call throughout the week if you have more questions, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Debbie. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Again, you're listening to Your Money and You, sponsored by Baird. My name is Kurt Carlson. I'm here with Brian Coble. Quick reminder, if you want to send us an email or a call, we do have a little bit of time left before the end of the hour, 866-391-1020. And again, if you would like to get some more detailed information on some of the things that we've been talking about today, you can always go to our website at carlsongroup.bairdwealth.com, and you can get some of the information on the inflation tips we talked about at the earlier part of the show, as well as some of the surprises that Brian covered, and that would be under both our webinar replay, what to know and what to do, as well as our top of mind. And again, many of those are updated on a regular basis. Brian, we've got maybe about a minute, one last maybe surprise that popped up that we didn't get to at the beginning of the first half.
Sure. Or maybe I'd even recommend folks go watch the replay of our webinar where we go over all five surprises. But just quickly, the rise of artificial intelligence. We talked about the resilient economy. Surprise number three would just be the regional banking rescue this spring. Number four, the rise of the millennials. And millennials are in their 30s and really spending money, very reminiscent of what the baby boomers did back in the 1980s. And then lastly, the fifth surprise is the relentless rise in interest rates. Not a big surprise that rates are up, but they have just gone up continually. And again, if you go to our website, Carlson Group, rwbaird.com, you can watch the replay of the webinar in its entirety. Kurt?
Thanks, and that's probably the best way to do it, is to get that full update. And again, speaking of millennials, there was an interesting article in this past week's Wall Street Journal talking about millennials' retirement savings outpace their elders. So if you get a chance, it's an interesting article just talking about how some of the changes are occurring within the industry. And it alluded to a big reason being the required automatic enrollment of 401k plans. So anyway, we are coming to the end of the show. We thank you for joining us today. And again, feel free to join us next Sunday and check out our website if you need any more information. With that, hope everyone has a wonderful week.
Thanks for joining us for Your Money and You, sponsored by Baird. If you have any questions, you can email us at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com or contact Baird at rwbaird.com. That's rwbaird.com.